And let's watch this video clip. It's a representation of the David and Goliath story. And so it's not exact, but it's pretty close. So let's take a look at this here this morning.
Not one man in Israel, not one of God's people,
I'll do it.
You're no soldier, you're a shepherd.
Yes, a shepherd. As I protect my sheep, God will protect me.
Where is your faith? Where is your God?
I will kill him.
You'll need this.
I'll be better without it. Yea, though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. You are with me. Thy rod and staff, they comfort me. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life.
So if you know the story, you'll know there's a couple of things that aren't quite exact there, but it's the general representation of it. So we've been talking about King Saul for the last few weeks. We're going to jump to the future King David today. And here they are. They're on the battle lines, Israel and the Philistines. They're on the battle line. And movies tend to make war seem somewhat sanitized, no matter how many effects they put into it. You still can't smell it. You still can't taste it. You're not right there. And in modern warfare today, a lot of modern warfare is from a distance. It's also more sanitized. But if you go back 3,000 years, war was hand-to-hand combat. War was you were next to the person. It was very, very difficult. A lot of people were killed and wounded in very serious ways. It was just a bad scene. And you'll notice that in ancient warfare, a lot of times they wouldn't even go into war with clothes on. They would almost be completely naked when they would go to battle. And the reason was, even though they didn't understand germs, they understood if they were punctured and a piece of cloth got into them, that they would lose that arm or that infection might cause them to die. And so it was just a horrible scene all the way around. And so I want you to understand that when you're thinking about ancient war and all of that, not to discourage you or anything here this morning, but that's just what it was like. And so we're going to read the story, bits of the story here today, 1 Samuel chapter 17. And I would encourage you to read all of this on your own, 1 Samuel chapter 17 in the Bible. If you don't have a physical Bible, download the Bible app on your phone. and you can read it there. In fact, we encourage all of you to download the Bible app on your phone so you have something that you can read the Bible. If you're not a great reader, that's okay. The Bible app has made it simple. You can listen to the Bible. And so that's, in fact, there's a lot of things you can watch. You can even watch a lot of the Bible now where people have made representative videos. So that's a great gift for you. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 1. The Philistines now mustered their army for battle. In verse 8, Goliath stood. Goliath is the giant guy. Goliath stood and shouted a taunt across the Israelites. Why are you coming out to fight? Why are you all coming out to fight? He called. I am the Philistine champion, but you are only the servants of Saul. Choose one man to come down here and fight me. If he kills me, then we will be your slaves. But if I kill him, you will be our slaves. I defy the armies of Israel today. Send me a man who will fight me. When Saul and the Israelites heard this, they were, what does it say? Terrified and deeply shaken. Saul was terrified along with his people. I want you to pay attention to that. Goliath here, when he was making this invitation to fight, it's not blatantly obvious, but what he was really doing was he was asking the king to come out and fight him. Because the king, King Saul, was a warrior, and he was the tallest of all the men. Like he stood at least a head's height higher than all the other men in his army. And so he was the only one that would have any chance whatsoever at defeating this giant named Goliath. The reality of the situation is that King Saul, who we learn had some very difficult times, he's the one that should have gone out to fight. He was the leader. He was the warrior. But he never came out of his tent. Instead, he was in his tent and he was terrified. The leader of the people was terrified and shaken. And when your leader is terrified and shaken, you are most likely going to be terrified and shaken as well. So the army could not even find their own courage because their leader was afraid. They had no courage left. A few weeks ago, we learned about how the people of Israel had rejected God as their king. They no longer wanted God to be their king. They had had this unique relationship with God that allowed Him to be their king, and He would protect them. They wanted to be like every other nation. They wanted a human king. And so God went ahead and allowed them to have a human king named Saul. But here's what took place when God stopped being their king. They placed their hope in Saul, a human, instead of in God. And so now their trust, now their hope was in a man, in a person. And do you know what happens when you put your hope in a person? Do you understand what happens? When you put your trust in a person, when you put your hope in a person instead of in God, you get disappointed. You get disappointed. When we place our hope, we place our hope in what we depend on, and we place our hope in who we depend on. And wherever we place our hope, that's who we depend on. So wherever your hope is, you can know that's what you're depending on. Their hope was in a man, in a human, in a person. And when he acted like a man, you understand? When you humans act like humans. I'm a human, you're a human, most of you are not one dog. The rest humans, okay? So when you're a human, you act like a human. That's just the way it is. And humans have something in common. We all mess up. We all fail. We're all flawed. That's just the reality of it. And we lose hope. We lose hope when we place our hope in a person. That's why we have the potential to be so angry with our parents or our teachers or our leaders, is because the reality is we oftentimes place our hope in them. And we depend on them. And when they fail, just like humans are prone to do, sometimes we lose hope and we are disappointed. King Saul is supposed to be leading, but instead he's hiding in a tent. And the army's hope is rapidly failing. When you place your hope in a person, you will always be disappointed. The reality is that anytime you place your hope in anyone other than God, you will find yourself in a situation where you have set yourself up for a big fall. Why? Very simply because people fail. Tell your neighbor, I mess up sometimes. I was going to say, now tell him the truth. I mess up all the time. Why? They fail. I get this. I want you to learn this. They fail because they're just like you and me. They're flawed and they are frail. You can't put your hope in me. I am not your hope. My wife did not even say amen. I am not your hope. I've said this for years. There's one thing I can promise you, and that's that I will fail. Because I'm human, and you're human. So first of all, please remember this. Our hope should always be in Christ and in Christ alone. He will never fail you. He never will. And second, when people fail, give them a break. Give them a break. They're just like you. They're just like you. And if you're honest, you know that you fail too. And so, if there's somebody that you were particularly ticked off at this morning when you walked into church, maybe it's time to let it go. Maybe it's time to forgive them. Maybe it's time to recognize, you know what, sometimes people make mistakes. And walk out of here a free person. Don't let that unforgiveness hold you down, bind you up. But people fail because that's what people do. Continuing with the story, verse 16, it's 40 days. 40 days this goes on. Every morning and evening, the Philistine champion struts in front of the Israelite army, mocking them, taunting them. He's saying all these horrible things to them. In 40 days, imagine 40 days of insults coming at you where you don't respond at all, except in terror. I mean, I bet Goliath was getting pretty good at some of his language and words that he was taunting the people with. It's this moment, this exact moment, when this 15-year-old kid named David shows up on the scene. He had been sent to the battlefront by his father. His father had sent him with food, and he wanted to check on his older brothers because they were seasoned warriors. He wanted to see how they were doing. So David shows up on the battlefront. And when David gets there, he hears, so this must be the 40th day, David hears that there's this defiant giant of a man. And David starts to ask questions. He starts to ask the why questions. What's going on here? Why is this guy out there allowed to just say whatever he wants? Why don't we just have God kill him? Okay. Verse 26, David asked the soldiers standing nearby, "What will a man get for killing the Philistine and ending his defiance of Israel? Who is this pagan Philistine anyhow that he's allowed to defy the armies of the living God?" So he asked three simple questions. What's the reward? I have no idea why he asked that, but he did ask it. Second, he asked, who is this pagan? Like, he's starting to get to the core of it. Who is this guy? And third, why is he allowed to defy God? He's 15 years old. He's a shepherd boy. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but when you go into a situation that's well established, people have already made all the decisions, and you walk in there and you don't know anything and you just start to ask questions like, why? Most people don't appreciate that. They don't like you. You just ask the why question. Why do we do it this way? Shut up and sit down. You know? You know, nobody wants to, we've been doing it this way for a long time. That's why. Just now, be quiet. So the why question, right? The why question. He's asking these questions. He's 15-year-old. He's a shepherd boy. But listen, I want you to understand something about this 15-year-old kid. He has a lot of time on his hands every single day because he's a shepherd. In today's culture, we don't give 15-year-olds a lot of responsibility. Back then, a 15-year-old was a seasoned shepherd. He had been shepherding sheep probably since he was 6 or 7 years old. He was a seasoned veteran of the shepherding profession. And out there by himself, all alone, in the wilderness with his sheep and a slingshot and a rod. And maybe a big stick. I want you to think about this. He also, we know from other scriptures, that David loved God, even at a young age. He really was passionately in love with God. He would talk to God when he was out there by himself. He would make up songs and he would write the songs. Some of those songs are even in the Bible today. He would do this, and it turns out that David was a true believer. He was not a pretend believer. He was a true believer. And this true believer, this 15-year-old kid who's a true believer, walks to the battlefront and he's appalled that the people of God have not stopped this Philistine from mocking God and his people. His questions, they aren't bad questions, they are good questions. But when you ask good questions to people that have lost hope and have lost vision, they don't always appreciate it. And that's exactly what the situation was. So he's asking questions, and his older brother doesn't particularly appreciate the questions. Verse 28, but when David's oldest brother, Eliab, heard David talking to the men, he was angry. What are you doing around here anyhow? He demanded. So now I want you to remember what the questions were. The question was, who is this guy? Why is he allowed to say this about God? His response is, what about those few sheep you are supposed to be taking care of? His brother doesn't answer the question. Instead, his brother tries to insult him and deflect the question. He doesn't want to answer the question. I know about your pride and deceit. You just want to see the battle. Now he's making fun of him. What have I done now? David replied. I was only asking a question. He walked over to some others, asked them the same thing, and received the same answer. Then David's question was reported to King Saul, and the king sent for him. Friends, there's power in questions. When you ask questions that get the king's attention, it's interesting. He asked good questions. Sometimes things just don't make sense, and you need to ask the question. These were not bad questions. These are not questions from a place of stupidity or foolishness. These were questions from a place of spiritual authenticity. He was right in his spirit. He was right in his heart. The answers were so obvious and disturbing that it caused something to stir up within David that caused him to act. You see, David knew the answer before he asked the question. He just didn't want to admit it. The answer was that the people did not believe that God would go before them. But he knew otherwise. You know, there's this saying, maybe in school, people say, hey, listen, no question's a bad question. You've heard that before? That's just a horrible statement. There are definitely bad questions. You've been in the classroom where somebody asked the bad question. Why did you ask that question? They just answered it 3 questions ago. Pay attention, please. Maybe you've never thought that, but I have. Sorry. So, anyhow, there are good questions. I want to teach you this. Good questions can lead to great outcomes for your life. Good questions can lead to great outcomes for your life. For example, one of the greatest questions you can ask in your life is very, very simple, 3-word question. Who am I? Who am I? You see, who am I question is the identity question. It's, what is my identity? Who am I? And so if you answer that question, well, I'm an I graduated from college, and this is my degree, or I'm a plumber, I'm an electrician, or this or that. You know, then you're answering the question incorrectly. That's not who you are. That's what you do. Or if you're like, oh, I understand. I'm a mom. I'm a dad. I'm a parent. Again, it's not who you are. Now, some of you are like, oh, man, who am I? Who am I? Good question. Good question. Anything, any answer to that question other than this, this is the point. The answer to the question, who am I, to the believer is, I am a child of God. I am a child of God. That's it. I'm a child of God. And I do, no. I am a child of God. That's it. That's all you need. That's just the greatest thing. That's who you are. Another great question is, why am I here? Not like Sunday at noon, but like, you know, on the planet. Why are you on the planet? That's a great question to ask yourself. Answer it and do something about it. What is my unique purpose? What are the specific things I'm supposed to be doing in life? Or how am I doing at fulfilling my unique purpose? How can I increase my capacity to fulfill my purpose? Or here's a good question, what can I do about injustice? Or how do I handle opposition? Or why am I living my life in a place of defeat? An honest answer to an honest question can change your life like that. Ask good questions. Wrestle for the answer. People aren't always going to want to give you an answer. There's a question that's posed in the Bible, one of the great questions. It says, if God is for me, who can be against me? That's a great question. You're going through life. People are opposing you. You come across that passage in the Bible that says, if God is for me, who can be against me? Oh, it doesn't matter that they're opposing me because God is for me. Helps you rethink, reshift. Good questions followed by action will change your life. Will change your life. If David never asked the questions, he doesn't kill the giant. He had to ask the questions first. Verse 32. David's now in front of the king. And he says, this 15-year-old, please remember, he's 15. This 15-year-old says to the king, don't worry about the Philistines. The Philistine. Oh, that's comforting from a 15-year-old. I'll go fight him. Oh, even better. The king responds appropriately, don't be ridiculous. There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy, and he's been a man of war since his youth. But David persisted. I want you to understand, what David's about to say convinces the king that David just might beat Goliath. How does a 15-year-old kid convince a king of a nation to do something impossible? But David persisted, I have been taking care of my father's sheep and goats, he said. When a lion or a bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it. First off, just stop there. I go after it. I don't go after lions and I don't go after bears. It's a rule in my life. All right? No lions, no bears. I go after it. So King Saul's listening now. Oh, you chase lions and bears. With a club, not a spear, not a knife, not a sword. And rescue the lamb from its mouth. That means he's touching the bear or the lion. You get it? He's grabbing him. He's doing wrestling with the bear or the lion and ripping the lamb out, saving its life. If the animal turns on me, which is what an animal would do, I catch it by the jaw. I tried to imagine this. I spent about an hour literally just thinking, how does a person catch a lion or a bear by the jaw? Where do you put your hand? How do you... inside the teeth, around the teeth, like underneath? Is there a special technique? I just started to think about that. And after I catch it by the jaw, I club it to death. Oh, okay. You club it to death. So I have done this to both lions and bears, and I will do this to the pagan Philistine too, for he has defied the armies of the living God. Now, I have read this passage a thousand times at least in my life, maybe more. It's one of the great ones. And I never caught it until this week. It says lions and bears. There's an S at the end of those. Not one time did he kill a lion or a bear. Lions, plural. That's amazing. You see, my point here is that David was being prepared his whole life to fight this Goliath. His brother just thought he was a lowly shepherd. Turns out, David was a warrior. He had been through stuff in his life that nobody else knew about. Does that connect with you? You've been through stuff nobody else knows about. That's why you're here. It's why you're not dead. It's why you're still standing. It's why you're still fighting. Then he says to this, to the king, "The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine." It's a great passage. It's a great verse. "The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and bear will rescue me from this Philistine." The young shepherd had been prepared his whole life, even though it was short. He understood that when he was a shepherd, these were his sheep, and he was a child of God, and he was supposed to protect the sheep. And the sheep did not belong to the lion, and the sheep did not belong to the bear. So he would go rescue the sheep fearlessly. He wouldn't just let it happen. He would go after them and save them. And if the lion or bear decided to go after David, David would just do what apparently David liked doing, club the thing to death. What's amazing about this 15-year-old, just imagine, what would a 15-year-old do if he, like, appropriately clubbed a bear to death? That would be on Instagram so fast, right? You know, and one of the things that I love about David is he didn't, like, get all puffed up and go do, like, selfies in the mirror about how his little bear scars and his lion scars and post them all over the place. No, this is what he did. He gave honor and praise to God for being the one that truly did the rescuing. He was just a tool. He was just a servant. God did the real rescuing. "The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and bear will rescue me from this Philistine." His mindset was right. He wasn't going to be able to do it. You ever had anything in your life that you couldn't figure out on your own? Like everything? It was too big for you? You tried 1,000 ways to stop, 1,000 times to stop, you couldn't do it? It's not until you let God do the rescuing. That was awesome. Verse 41. Goliath walked out toward David. So King Saul gives him his permission. He goes out there. The armor doesn't fit, so he just walks out. Just him, a few stones, and a slingshot. They're coming to face each other. Goliath walks toward David with his shield bearer ahead of him, sneering in contempt at this ruddy-faced boy. "Am I a dog?" he roared at David, "that you come at me with a stick?" And he cursed David by the names of his gods. "Come over here, I will give your flesh to the birds and wild animals," Goliath yelled. So he's taunting him, he's yelling at him. And I see in this text, I see three things that Goliath said to David that Satan still does with you right now. Three things that he's still doing. First off, he comes after him. He says the enemy makes fun of his physical appearance. You ruddy face, the ruddy-faced boy part of that. He's mocking him for his appearance. How many times in life have you heard the voice You're not pretty enough. You're not good looking enough. You're not strong enough. You're not masculine enough. You're not feminine enough. Whatever it is. How many times have you heard this voice in your head? Listen, when you're looking in the mirror and you start to hear these things, that's not God. It's not even you. It's the enemy throwing things through your mind. It's just fiery darts trying to get you off mission, trying to get you out of, just trying to take you to a bad place. One thing after another. That's not you. That's the enemy. That's Goliath speaking into your ear. You're just a ruddy-faced boy. The second thing he does is he mocks his strategy. He's coming out there with no weapon that he knows about. Doesn't have a sword, doesn't have a spear, doesn't have a shield, doesn't have an armor bearer, has nothing. And so the enemy mocks his strategy, and the enemy does the same thing with you. The enemy will mock your strategy. When you start to venture into spiritual strategies in your life, the enemy will come after you and try to taunt you and mock you for doing it. He's like having just a heyday in your life, and you get down on your knees and you start to pray. The next day, the enemy is in your ear saying, "That was a good strategy. How did that work for you? Huh? How did that work for you? You ain't got nothing on me. You have no chance. I own you." And so the enemy just keeps on mocking your strategy. Third, the enemy tries to intimidate you. Goliath tried to intimidate him. He says, "I'm going to feed your flesh to the birds and wild animals," Goliath yelled. The enemy does the same thing to you today. He tells you that he's got you, that he's going to kill you, that you're not going to make it. You get the idea. You've been there. The enemy's done this to you. But the enemy tries to intimidate you. Verse 45, David replied to the Philistine. Now listen carefully to what he says, because this is his enemy, and you have an enemy. And think about how you could say this to them. "You come to me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Today the Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head. And then I will give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And everyone assembled here will know that the Lord rescues his people, but not with sword and spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he will give you to us." As Goliath moved closer to attack, David quickly ran out to meet him. Reaching into his shepherd's bag, taking out a stone, he hurled it with his sling and hit the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank in, and Goliath stumbled and fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with only a sling and a stone, for he had no sword. Then David ran over and pulled Goliath's sword from his sheath. David used it to kill him and to cut off his head. In David's mind, when you defied Israel, you were defying God. And he sees the enemy mocking God. And he recognizes that the enemy has positioned themselves as an enemy of God. And he recognizes in this moment that he has no need to be afraid of the enemies of God. Why? Because God will go before him. The Bible says that when the enemy comes against you, he will flee in seven directions. Why? Because you're so awesome? No, because the enemies of God, God protects. God goes before them. God has to send the enemy in a different direction. David makes a declaration of faith to Goliath. As the worship team comes up, I'll teach you about this. Listen, I'm not talking about human beings right now, okay? Don't cut any human beings' heads off. This is a bad idea. Don't kill anybody. Okay? David makes a declaration of faith to Goliath. And when he did so, he was direct. He was to the point, and he trusted in God for the victory. He didn't get sidetracked in a conversation with Goliath. He just said directly to Goliath what he needed to say and got to business. Friends, the enemy is going to come against you. He always does. And when he taunts you And when he mocks you, and when he tries to discourage you, it's time to remember who you are and who you belong to. You see, you are a child of God, and you belong to the only true King. Some of you walked in today, and you are in the battle of a lifetime. For real, like this, you are in the crux, you are in the battle of a lifetime. Maybe you're trying to overcome something. Maybe it's a relationship challenge. Maybe it's a disappointment. Maybe it's a tragedy. Whatever it is, you are in the battle of a lifetime. Maybe it's a great season of conflict for you. I want you to recognize that those are the Philistines in your life. Those are the Goliaths in your life. And when the Philistines of cancer and chaos and confusion and depression, when the Philistines of anxiety and frustrations and disappointment, and I could go on, when they come after you, no matter what it is that's facing you today, you get to speak to your Goliath in faith. And you get to speak to your Goliath in faith today, whatever it is. And I want you to memorize what David said. The Lord will conquer you. I will kill you and cut off your head. That's a statement of victory. The Lord will conquer you. And I will kill you and cut off your head. Whatever that situation that's coming against you, whatever that enemy is that's coming against you, that's how you speak to your spiritual enemy in faith. You know those suspense movies where the evil villain, like the climax of the movie, you know, there's an evil villain and finally they get him and they kill him and he's not terrorizing them anymore. Then they go off to the side and they hug and they're celebrating, but they didn't really kill him, you know what I'm talking about? And then he gets back up and they have to kill him again. I love that part where David is thorough and cut off his head, cut off the influence. Make it so it can't ever come back again, no matter what. It's done. It's done. I love that. The Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you, and I will cut off your head. We challenge you all the time to take another step forward. Take a positive step forward in your life. One step, one step, one step, one step. You don't have to go from A to Z tomorrow. Go from A to A and a half. Then to B. Or whatever it takes. But here's something that's a reality. Every time you take a positive step forward in your life, every time you go to a next level, every time you go to a new level, there's something that happens. At new levels, you face new demons. At new levels, you face new opposition. At new levels, you face different distractions. Every time you step forward, every time you step up, every time you start to do what the thing is that God wants you to do, every single time you will be opposed. And as I've said so many times, you are in a war. So live like you're in a war and fight like you're in a war. Don't just step back and be like, oh, that's too much. Whew, I don't want to do that. Take the next step. And look at that demon. The Lord will conquer you. I will kill you and cut off your head. David would turn out to be Israel's greatest king. It's a great story. It's filled with reality and humanity and victory and defeat. He was not Israel's greatest king because he was perfect. Because David was not perfect, and we'll play that out in the weeks ahead. Definitely was not perfect. He was very flawed, extremely flawed, super, super flawed. In fact, he was flawed. You can't miss that in the story. But he never forgot. In all of his failures, always returned to God. And he never forgot this one really important thing. He never forgot he was not the real king. He was not the real king. but that if there was a king that was greater than him, it was the Lord. And if the Lord did not rescue him, he could not be rescued. It's a great lesson for us that his hope is always in the Lord. Even in his failings, the Lord is the one that will bring him back. Would you stand with me as we close? Friends, the worship team will lead us in this song as we go, but I want you to know that the altars are open. If you'd like to spend some time in prayer, please do. Maybe today you're here and your hope is not in God. Maybe you're hoping in yourself still. Maybe you're hoping in a light bulb. Maybe you're hoping in your parents or a friend or a program or an institution. All of them will fail you. But God never will. I challenge you today, place your hope in God. Second, if you have a giant that's coming after you, you have a Philistine that's owning you right now, you're just sitting in the tent of life, terrified and shaken, it's time to come out of the tent. It's time to face Goliath. Put your hope in God. Make that declaration. The Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head. Maybe there's something like that that you need to do today. As the worship team leads us, why don't you pray about that, reflect on it. If you want to spend some time at the altar, please.
Because you are children of God, you can declare with confidence to every Philistine and Goliath in your life this week, the Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head. Go in victory this week, everybody. Love you. Be blessed. Experience God's best in your life. Encourage somebody on your way out of service today.